Hello, I'm David Sisko. This is number 0419 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0419. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet voice actor Bob Bergen, who has been the voice of Porky Pig for the last 27 years. It's the one job he's wanted since early childhood.
I always tell people, you know, follow your dreams. Usually follow your dreams as I want to be an actor, I want to be a singer, I want to be a dancer. To have one character in mind, that's a toughie. You know, if somebody says I really want to be, you know, Mickey Mouse, I'm like, you know, that's going to be hard. But then I have to go, well, I did it. So, you know, I say to everybody, follow your dream. But my parents were extremely, especially my mom, very, very, very supportive.
Social commentator Pavlina Osta on the constant use these days of emojis in business.
This study was showing that millennials don't know how to basically write a proper professional email, and they have to use emojis and everything that makes them look very unprofessional, and it definitely does. But I just think it's fascinating that they can't seem to get that they're excited or maybe whatever they're, you know, whatever kind of emotion they're trying to get across, you know, in an email. I'm just surprised that they can't seem to do that without, you know, putting a smiley face or the geek emoji in there or, you know, something like that. So I find it very interesting that this is kind of where we're going.
Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter takes an inside look at the U.S. Senate with him, Al Franken, with Al Franken, giant of the Senate. This is not a filibuster, so join us on the floor on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0419 was fitness specialist David Sisko of Sisko Gym. It's amazing how he found a gym that was named after him. It's amazing how that works out together. It's kismet. Anyway, thank you very much, Dave, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Much appreciated. A program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police in Germany announced that they seized about 5,000 ecstasy tablets modeled after the head of U.S. President Donald Trump. Osnabrück police said they searched a car during a traffic stop at about 9 p.m. Saturday and discovered the approximately $12,900 worth of ecstasy tablets, which bore the image of Trump's face on one side and his name on the opposite side. Well, he really is into branding. Police said they also seized a large amount of cash from the vehicle, which was registered in Austria. The driver, a 51-year-old man, and his 17-year-old son were detained and are expected to be charged with drug trafficking. Police said the pair had been coming from Amsterdam, where the drugs are believed to have been produced. You know, I've heard people express that because of Trump that they wanted to get high, but I don't think this is exactly what they had in mind. And police in Louisiana released security camera footage of a shoplifter taking 18 bottles of wine and liquor from a store by shoving them in her clothes and purse. The security camera footage from the Thrifty liquor store in Shreveport shows a woman concealing 18 bottles of wine and liquor in her purse, pants, and bra before paying for a single bottle of alcohol and leaving the store. The video, posted to YouTube by the Shreveport Caddo Crime Stoppers, led to the Shreveport City Marshal's Office and Louisiana State Probation and Parole Office to identify the woman in the footage as 37-year-old Sikoni Jones. Jones was contacted by investigators, and she surrendered. She was arrested on account of misdemeanor theft. Now, I've put the video on the Stuff File Facebook page. It's 2 minutes and 34 seconds of comedic goodness, and I sincerely hope that the bottle she was shoving into her clothes won't be resold. If I were to caption the video, it would be, Are you an alcoholic, or are you just glad to see me? Yeah. Police in Oklahoma City arrested Jimmy McCoy on a burglary charge. McCoy apparently faked a seizure and was taken to a hospital. There, he told officers he needed to use the restroom, and officers escorted him there and removed his handcuffs. McCoy ran. Pursuing officers caught up with him in a patient's room. McCoy, they say, was standing on the patient and trying to climb into the ceiling to escape. McCoy ran again and tried to dive through a window to freedom. He bounced off the window, which is a good thing since he was on the sixth floor. Officers had to pepper spray him to gain control and take McCoy back into custody. The patient he had been standing on died. So McCoy is now charged with murder. Now, I've actually seen a video of this moron as well. This one I am not posting on the Stuff File Facebook page. All I have to say is there's a very dark corner of a prison that is waiting just for this pinhead. Meanwhile, after a car thief in Daytona Beach, Florida was arrested for the third time in just 6 weeks, the judge ordered him to wear an ankle monitor. But within 6 hours of being released with the monitor, the thief had cut it off and was arrested again in the company of other known car thieves. He has a look-at-me attitude, says the investigator in the case. That would be Sergeant Tim Ehrenkoffer. He's flashy. The criminal's name was withheld because he's only 10 years old. He even looks like a 10-year-old, said Captain Jennifer Croshell. The local paper notes that's the age of a fourth grader. Okay, what I want to know is exactly who are the known car thieves that he's in the company of, and at what point do you call child services? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, a man in Fort Pierce, Florida, awoke to a car fire in front of his house and called the fire department. Before firefighters arrived, however, its driver, 24-year-old Marcos Gonzalez Salinas, got in the car and drove away, still in flames, I may add. He went around the block and pulled up again, pulled a gun, and shot the car. Once police finally arrived, they found Gonzalez Salinas hiding nearby. He was charged with being a felon in possession of a weapon and firing it in public. Police said he was under the influence of something, but they don't know what. Well, clearly he wasn't under the influence of common sense. I mean, how lucky do you have to be to drive a flaming car that doesn't explode? Yeah. Anyway. Let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's been a couple of years since we last had the chance to talk to Bob Bergen. He's a very busy guy and one who's hard to pin down. Bob is a 2-time Emmy-nominated actor and top voiceover talent. He's the voice of both Porky Pig and Tweety for Warner Brothers. He's also heard in a host of animated films from Minions to Sing to The Secret Life of Pets, Monsters, Inc., and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Bob joins us on the line right now from L.A. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Peter. What's going on?
Oh, nice to talk to you once again, sir. I got to ask you right off the bat, what are you working on these days? Because I know you're very, very busy, and you're also teaching, too.
I am. Well, working on what I can talk about, because these days they make you sign a non-disclosure agreement with everything. So what I know I can talk about is we're in the middle of recording season 3 for our series New Looney Tunes, which is debuting on the Boomerang subscription service. And I think actually only season 1 has started airing, but it is quite possibly the best written Looney Tunes project I've ever worked on. Let's see, what else can I talk? There's other things I'm working on right now, my friend. I'm working on Curious George that I can talk about, but a lot of stuff, it's features and stuff that we just can't talk about until they come out.
I got you.
Now, I mean, you mentioned some of the stuff that's out right now, like, you know, Despicable Me 3 and the Smurfs movie and Trolls and whatnot, but as you're working on stuff, they're very, very picky about keeping everything hush-hush.
Now, the one thing about animation, especially in film form, is that you do the voices and the film comes out sometimes years down the road. Sometimes when the film comes out, do you forget you actually were in that?
Oh, I'll tell you an interesting story. And the answer to your question is yes. I kept getting emails from people congratulating me. They saw my name in the credits for Sing. And I kept, you know, replying, I didn't work on Sing. And, I mean, more and more people, my mom calls me up. She goes, oh, I saw you worked on Sing. No, I didn't. So here's what happened. I got a call to work 2 days on a feature, non-disclosure agreement. They even gave us a fake name. And I worked for 2 days on this film. Now, when you do work on a film, if you're not playing the lead, you just work on the pages that you're in. You don't even see the whole script. So a week later, I get a call from the same casting director who called me for that one to work on Secret Life of Pets. And she informed me that the previous job was also Secret Life of Pets. Cut to a few years later, I hear I'm in Sing. No, it wasn't Secret Life of Pets. It was Sing. And the casting director didn't even know it was Sing because they kept it from her, too. That's how tight these non-disclosure agreements are. So you forget what you did. You forget that you did. And you never or rarely even know what the story is. So it's fresh when I see it because I literally might have recorded it 4 years ago.
Well, let me bring this back full circle for you. You recently signed up with a PR firm, and I know the guy who runs a PR firm because I've dealt with him various times in the past with other guests, Anthony Turk, mm-hmm. who does a great job.
Yeah.
But it was when I got the email that you were now with Anthony Turk, I said, oh, wow, I just saw him a week ago because I watched Sing.
That's too funny. See, there you go.
So that's
and
why.
I've not seen it yet.
Yeah, I saw it just a couple weeks ago. So there you go. There you go.
That's funny, man.
Now, you also teach, which is something we talked about. I guess we should go back to the beginning a little bit because I don't want to rehash the whole story, but what I found fascinating when I first talked to you was the fact that you were a 14-year-old kid who basically went through the phone book and found Mel Blanc, talked to him, got on set with it where he was doing some work, and as the saying goes, the rest is history. And your mom went along on this ride with you, which I thought was really fantastic because she was basically an enabler to you, wasn't she?
Completely. And I think both of my parents were very supportive because they saw how focused and driven I was. It was like there was no doubt I was going to do this. So now I always tell people, you know, follow your dreams. Usually follow your dreams as I want to be an actor. I want to be a singer. I want to be a dancer. To have one character in mind, that's a toughie. You know, if somebody says, I really want to be, you know, Mickey Mouse, I'm like, you know, that's going to be hard. But then I have to go, well, I did it. So, you know, I say to everybody, follow your dream. But my parents were extremely, especially my mom, very, very, very supportive.
Now, you were very specific. When you were a child, you wanted to be Porky Pig. Why Porky?
Because I could do him. I got a tape recorder when I was 5, and I would record cartoons. And I remember just announcing to my parents, there's one guy doing all these voices, and I couldn't even read the credits. One guy doing all these voices, I can hear a common denominator, and I found a formula to his stutter. So I was able to, I mean, my voice hadn't changed. I didn't really sound like him, but I was able to decipher how he talked. And I added, you know, the ad-libbing and the humor as you're creating something other than what you're trying to say, which is, you know, as a 5-year-old kid, I don't know what's acting. So the bottom line is I just knew how to do them.
So basically, at an early age, you got the cadence, and your voice came later as you aged.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I thought I sounded like him when I was younger, but not so much.
I hear you. I know exactly what you're talking about. So let's flash forward to, as an adult, you've been doing Porky Pig now for, what, 27 years?
Yeah, 27 years, yeah.
How has your voice changed, if at all, as an adult?
Good question. When I first started doing the character, they would play me about a 20-minute reference. And they were trying to be thorough, but it was really kind of backfired. Because in the 20-minute reference, they had a cartoon from the 30s, a cartoon from the 40s, a cartoon from the 50s, a cartoon from the 60s. And I would say, which one do you guys want? Because Mel Blanc kept evolving as the character evolved, as the writing evolved. And so they, to be honest, didn't even understand what I was saying. So I took it upon myself as an actor to decide, okay, I think Mel really nailed Porky 1953 to 1956, which would be the Duck Dodgers, Drip-Along Daffy, Robin Hood Daffy era. So that's what I would strive for when I would do the character. It's interesting. I just came back. Well, not just, but a few weeks ago, I did San Diego Comic-Con, and this one gal came up to me, and she said, "You know, I know you're not the original voice, but I'm 20, 25 years old. I've been fresh out of college. And she said, as far as I know, you're the only Porky Pig I've ever known. So when I see some of the older stuff, it doesn't quite sit well with me because I know you from the series Duck Dodgers. I know you from the Looney Tunes show, et cetera, or Space Jam. So that was kind of like a revelation. I never really thought of it that way, that we have generations that have only really seen the newer stuff because they stopped airing. They've got them back now, but for a long time, they weren't airing the classic Looney Tunes. So that was just kind of interesting. The difficult part for me, it's not difficult, it's kind of a fun challenge, but, you know, Mel Blanc, when he was doing the Looney Tunes, they didn't have cell phones. They didn't have computers. They were always references to pop culture and, I guess, you know, even technology of the day. So when you put these characters in situations of today and reference pop culture today, you still have to keep the integrity of the character, but you also have to be able to flawlessly and organically incorporate today with yesterday's characters. It's a fun challenge.
Hmm. Since you've been doing the character for so long, are there now things that come to you in a script and you'd say, oh, I don't think Porky would say that? Or
Yeah. And here's what I'll do. I mean, you never want to step on toes. I'll do the line as written, and then I'll say to the director or the producer, can I try one more just for me? And they'll say, sure. Oftentimes, it's, you know, anytime I work for a brand new producer, I get a script and they type in my stutter. And I'm like, look, unless you've got a specific gag you want me to do, if you type in my stutter throughout the script, I can't find the story. It's just, there's nothing but a bunch of vowels and consonants repeated with dashes, and I can't read the script. So if you'll allow me to just know that I know the character well enough to find the funny and find the stutter, because I don't plan it. It just comes out as I read the script. But then if there's a funny ad lib or a twist they really want that they've written, no problem. If I see something where I'm like, that's not Porky-esque, I'll just say, let me try one more for me. I'm working with a crew right now, Matt Craig, Gary Hartle, Colette Sunderman, voice director, on our new series, New Looney Tunes. It is so collaborative, and there's never, ever been anybody say, nope, sorry, this is the way it's written. They know that we know these characters. But it's always been very collaborative.
In these politically correct days, has there been pushback about Porky Stutter?
Was back when I first got the job back in 1990. Definitely. Today, not at all. Today, they are allowing the classic characters to be classic characters. But back when I first started, they would actually cancel projects and make it Petunia because they didn't want to be politically incorrect. So, but that died down. That died down, I would say, probably when we did Duck Dodgers, which was years ago. I don't think that they're as concerned about political correctness. And I'm glad, because this is called comedy. These are characters. They're not making fun of anybody. In fact, Porky is, I always found him to be this terrific little guy, despite the fact that this is just how we talked. It was never an issue other than comedy. And we got to learn to laugh at ourselves. You know, life is too serious, especially today.
You've literally followed your dream. You have the character of Porky Pig. You've been doing it for 27 years. And in addition to a myriad of other voices and teaching animation, voice work and the like, is there anything in your career you've wanted to do, or is there any goals you have to set still that you haven't achieved?
You know, I think for all actors, it's that next job. That's the luxury of being a working actor. There will be a next job, and you never know what it is, and that's exciting. I would love to see the Looney Tunes characters in front of every Warner Brothers feature. I would love to see the Warner Brothers stores come back. I would love another original character that becomes an iconic character like a SpongeBob or a Bart Simpson, et cetera. I would love to do a sitcom. You know, I'm never bored, you know, I'm a workaholic. I never plan to retire. There's no reason to. As long as I can talk into a mic, I can work.
You've originated some characters yourself, in addition to mm-hmm. doing voices like Porky Pig. What's more fun for you, starting a character from scratch or assuming the role of some character that's already been around for generations, in this case with Porky Pig?
They both have their pluses. You know, when you're creating a character, it's yours, and there's that sense of ownership. When you're taking over for a classic character, there's a sense of responsibility. and upholding the integrity of the character. They both have their challenges, and we're all replaceable. No matter who you are in this business, you're replaceable. So, you know, if I create an original character, you know, one day where I say, that's all, folks, somebody else will be taking over that character. So your goal is to be honest in your acting, honest in your character. But they're both satisfying. As far as I'm concerned, you know, Porky was my goal. I met it when I was really young. I was like 26, I think, when I got my first Looney Tunes job. And I was actually depressed that day because I was like, well, now what do I do? And, you know, because the lifelong goal met at 26. Continue working and continue creating and just continue going with the flow. So I like them both. I like creating new and I like doing the classic.
So you're not worried about some 14-year-old kid tracking you down and following you around like the Grim Reaper?
It happens all the time. I mean, I get emails every day from people looking to get into this business. I participated in a documentary called I Know That Voice, where I teach people to break down Porky's stutter. I did that at the Hollywood Bowl 2 years ago at Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. They had me come out and do a tribute to Mel. And for two nights, I taught 18,000 people each night how to do Porky Pig. You know, getting the stutter down is one thing. Being able to make full sentences and telling the story is another. Somebody out there is better, and they deserve the job. They deserve the job. So until that happens, I'm going to keep on stuttering.
In that case, we're just about done. We can't let you go without hearing from Porky.
Well, thanks, Peter. I was waiting for this.
You've been around for a very, very long time. How do you keep young, Porky?
Well, in Beverly Hills, they have a lot of the plastic surgery. I've had many a facelift.
How are you still going strong with Petunia?
Oh, yeah. Petunia's my girlfriend for many years. But we're not married, and we don't live together. And she's very demanding. But she's kind of cute.
When are you going to make an honest pig out of her?
Do I have to?
Bob?
Is there something you know that I don't know?
Bob, thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us. It's always a pleasure to have a chance to share a few words with you.
We'll do it again in 15 years, Peter.
Yeah, 15 years. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Take care, buddy.
That was the amazing voice actor, Bob Bergen. You can visit his website at bobbergen.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0419, and you'll find links to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. The best thing since sliced bread. No loafing here.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about millennials and their constant use of emojis. Plus, Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter here on a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Okay, back to the stuff. And this has been a recent phenomenon, but already it's getting kind of tired. That is, people who either commit a crime because they want to put it on social media as a prank, or people who, after committing a crime, get caught because they later put it on social media not realizing, you know, everyone can see it. Anyway, this particular case is the former. Two London, Kentucky teenagers wanted to pull a prank to share on social media, so the local sheriff's office says they went to the freezer at a Dunkin' Donuts and, video rolling, took an ice cream cake. Confronted by workers, one of the pranksters profanely explained that the cake was now his. Since it was just a $25 to $30 cake, the prank could have been prosecuted as misdemeanor theft, but officers charged felony burglary instead. "We're really going to jail for this?" said one of the teenagers. Stealing is stealing, said Deputy Gilbert Arquiato. And stupid is as stupid does. Let's see how viral these morons go now, huh? Yeah. Residents of Hollis, Maine were unnerved on the evening of July 25th as 31-year-old Corey Berry, wearing a clown mask, walked around town with a machete duct taped to the place where his arm had been amputated. When Berry, intoxicated, was taken into custody in nearby Waterboro, he explained to officers that he was copying other clown sightings as a prank on a friend. Carmen LePage of Hollis warned, "He's not funny. We live in the woods. You think we don't have guns? He's lucky." You know, Carmen's got a point. He could have easily been a dead, one-armed clown wannabe. Probably a sad clown. Yeah. Customers at a Flying J truck stop in West Hanover Township, Virginia, got quite a show on August 14th when 54-year-old Craig Trocchia of Roanoke smashed the windshield of his truck and poured a cup of urine into the interior. Wait, did we mention Craig was naked? No, we didn't? Okay, he was. He then yelled a racial epithet at a black man and flashed his genitals at anyone within sight. Next, still naked, Craig pointed a gun at the same man and then at another man and threatened to kill them both. After state troopers loaded Craig into their cruiser, he slammed his body and head on the various panels of the vehicle, they reported. He was charged with 34 criminal counts, including public drunkenness. Well, at least he didn't have any tiki torches. Seriously. He has some serious anger management issues. 27-year-old Jeremy A. Perkins was led astray by someone who told him the purge was happening on August the 12th in Kansas City, Missouri. In case you don't know, The Purge was a 2013 horror film that envisioned a temporary decriminalization of all criminal acts after which society collapses in chaos. Okay? Now, in response, and high on methamphetamines, I may add, Perkins climbed to the top of a building and began throwing rocks at passing vehicles. Perkins told responding officers that he perceived everyone to be his enemy and he was trying to protect himself. He added that if he had a gun, he would have shot people. Well, now instead of being an enemy to everyone, he's just merely an enemy of the state. And police say a boy found a gun in a dressing room at an Atlanta mall and it fired when the mother pulled the trigger to see if it was real. It was real. News outlets report the mother and son were inside a dressing room at the Adidas store in Lenox Square when the 10-year-old boy found what he thought was a toy gun under a bench. Atlanta police spokesman Stephanie Brown says the mother took the gun from the boy and pulled the trigger to see if it was real. A single shot was fired. Brown says there were no injuries. There was minimal damage to a wall. No charges have been filed, and the case remains under investigation. Gee, I wonder how this woman tests to see if the stove is hot. Thinks she uses her tongue? Anyway. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, there are 70 registered voters in McIntyre, Iowa, but not one of them showed up to vote in a two-question special election on August the 1st. Mitchell County Deputy Auditor Barbara Baldwin told reporters that even poll takers didn't vote because none of them live in McIntyre, which is about 130 miles northeast of Des Moines. You know, I've always said the wonderful thing about democracy is that you always get the government you deserve. I really don't see a reason to change that philosophical thought. People just need to keep that in mind and act accordingly when election time rolls around. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program. Visuals like emojis and GIFs, or GIFs, depending how you pronounce them, can make up for the usual cues that are often missing from digital chit-chatting. But a new survey reveals that many people, basically millennials, believe those visuals aren't just helpful for adding clarity in text and mobile messages. They actually feel that they can better express themselves through those digital tools than through old-fashioned English. Joining us now to talk about this is Pavlina Osta. She's a New York City-based millennial political social commentator, and she joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Paulina.
Hi, how are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. I know that you are very, very busy. So the whole idea of emojis, now again, I'm a baby boomer, so I'm the older crowd. To me, right. It just seems like we're going, electronically, we're going back to cave drawings.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that's a good comparison. Basically, what millennials are, what's happening with this millennial generation and the generations after them, is they're not really knowing how to express themselves in the written form or really in communication. They don't know how to have a normal conversation. They can't have eye-to-eye contact with someone or, you know, talk to people on the phone, even if it's, you know, ordering food or something. They have to do it all digitally, and that kind of goes hand-in-hand with this. This study was showing that, you know, millennials don't know how to basically write a proper professional email, and they have to use emojis and everything that makes them look very unprofessional, and it definitely does. But I just think it's fascinating that they can't seem to get that they're excited or maybe whatever they're, you know, whatever kind of emotion they're trying to get across, you know, in an email. I'm just surprised that they can't seem to do that without, you know, putting a smiley face or the geek emoji in there or, you know, something like that. So I find it very interesting that this is kind of where we're going.
You say it's interesting, but is it problematic in your estimation?
I definitely think it could be problematic just because, you know, I use emojis in my work emails if it's a good friend that's a coworker. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only time I ever use emojis in an email. But if you're, like, just meeting this person for the first time or if you're just now emailing them, like, you're sending them your resume and your cover letter, you know, you're really not going to be wanting to send them emojis. In the study, it was saying that basically it kind of gives off the impression that you're incompetent and you're not basically, like what we were saying, you're not able to kind of express yourself and present a professional email. So I definitely think it can be become problematic.
Now, when we're talking about, again, you're saying things like resumes. When people are sending resumes, chances are they're sending a resume to somebody who is older than them. So I can understand
exactly.
That problem that you're describing. But are we heading toward a point in the future where emojis will just become the simple way of life as the millennials become the power brokers of their generation and take over the business world? Will this just become common practice in the years to come?
I definitely think it's going to take over as a major thing that's accepted, I guess, in society. If you saw there was like an emoji movie or whatever, and I was like, this is the downfall of Western civilization. Like, we are all, oh goodness. You know, once that emoji movie came out, that was like the end, because that's teaching all of like the younger kids, you know, how cool emojis are or whatever. And, you know, they're going to start using them, and it just kind of like, it's a cycle really. But I definitely think, you know, the more we are, millennials are taking over and everything. And I'm actually Generation Z. I'm 19. So I'm the generation right after millennials. So it's very interesting to, you know, to watch them and see how this is all progressing. GIFs are a big thing that are going out in text messages and emails and everything. And I have a feeling, you know, the standard professional work email that you send to your boss or you send to whoever, it's going to become very, you know, casual. It's going to become very, that separation of, you know, this is your boss and you're the coworker is really, I feel like that, you know, like the distance that is kind of like, oh, I want to make sure this email is perfect. I feel like that's not really going to be there just because you're putting emojis in, you're putting different GIFs in, you know, you're making it more of a fun email rather than a professional business email.
Well, if it makes you feel any better,
yeah.
There was the emoji movie, but it didn't do well at the box office, so it's gone the way of the
that,
dodo.
Yeah.
However, there is still a successful game show on the game show network, Emojinius, which is rather interesting. So that's out there. Now, as I introduced you, I said millennial political, New York-based millennial political social commentator, and as you just mentioned, you're actually the generation after the millennials, so you're spending a lot of time talking about what the millennials are doing, but you're a generation younger than them. I'm a generation older than them. I know how I necessarily feel about them. How do you feel about millennials?
I have some mixed opinions about millennials. You know, I do bash on them a lot of the time just because of all the studies that are coming out and from what I've seen with a lot of millennials, and they are generalized a lot. You know what I mean? Like, they have some horrible stereotypes against them. Like, they're lazy and they don't want to leave their parents' basement. They have all this college debt. They don't want to raise families anymore. They can't buy houses or cars. Like, there's all kinds of things, which I always think, you know, whatever generation, you know, is before the generation that's up and coming, I feel like that kind of criticism is always going to be there. But at the same time, millennials definitely have it harder just because they're so invested in this, like, digital age. And, yeah, you know, it's, I love, you know, analyzing it and everything, but there are definitely two different groups of millennials. There is the millennial that is, you know, kind of follows that stereotype of really has no motivation. They don't feel like getting a job. I definitely know some families that are, like, struggling with that right now. But then there's a lot of kids that are probably, they're more on, like, the younger side, I think, of the millennials. But of course, there are the older ones that are fully functional, that are complete go-getters. They are doing amazing in their fields. They are, you know, going to college. They have scholarships. They're not in college debt. And they're doing, you know, they're doing well in life. So they definitely get a bad rep, but there are, of course, the good millennials as well.
It sounds like even though you're a generation that follows them, you yourself, your outlook seems to be a throwback to a generation from before them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah.
So, again, getting back to the whole idea of emojis, do you think, generally speaking, this is something that is overused?
I do think it is overused. I have gotten some, you know, some emails. A lot of people in my company don't know that I'm 19 because, you know, I'm executive producer of all of our podcasts and everything, so they don't really assume that I'm 19. And even from them, I've gotten, you know, different, like, stuff. And I'm like, you know, being 19, of course, I'm excited to see emojis because I'm like, oh, like, it's fun sort of thing. But I'm also like, this is a work professional email. Like, I wouldn't be using it. But yeah, you know, I think, I just think it's going to be something that's slowly going to be integrated into our everyday work emails, which I guess is a good and a bad thing. You know, if you really look at it, it makes it more fun, but it's also kind of like, I personally have that older kind of like what you were saying, this older outlook on like work emails where they have to be professional. And I make sure I get like four different opinions before I send, you know, an important email. I'm like, Mom, does this sound okay? Hey, Susan, does this sound okay? Like, I want to make sure that it sounds good. And the fact that, you know, people are using emojis more and more, and I'm definitely seeing, emoji usage or whatever being used more. It's definitely going to be interesting.
Well, you mentioned some of the work you do. We have just about a minute. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you do. Define your job.
Yes. So I am currently in Florida because I'm going to be the mistress of ceremonies for Vince Carter's charity gala. Vince Carter and I go way back. He was the first celebrity I ever interviewed when I was 11. I started my radio show when I was 11. I ended it when I was 18 because I got a job in New York, and that's when I moved up to the city. And now I am the executive director and producer of all of our national podcasts for the Salem Media Group. And I love working for them. It's like such a family, you know, like we're all a big family over there. It's great. And yeah, I do that every day. And then I'm also a full-time college student at the King's College, which is in the financial district.
Wow. Wow. When are you running for president?
Right. You know, I guess I have to be, what, 34 or something for that, right?
Yes.
Is that the youngest age? Yeah. So I'm 19 now. I got a couple years, 20, 40 something, maybe. I could see it.
But you know, there.
I'm kidding. But that would be fun. That'd be fun.
Actually, you know, there are other political offices before reaching presidency that you can actually run for right now.
I know. I don't recall. I remember when I was in middle school, I was a House of Representatives page. So I would work in, you know, the Florida House of Representatives and everything, because I'm from Florida. And I've always wanted to be a representative, you know, in our House, you know, representatives and everything. And just like seeing how that works and everything, it's always been really fun. So I don't know, maybe politics could be in there somewhere. But media has always been, I feel like media, I just live and breathe it, you know? But yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you and getting your spin on the use of emojis, either the use or the overuse, depending how you look at it. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Social commentator Paulina Auster. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0419, and you'll find links to her site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In basketball, a player who commits too many fouls is ejected from the game. In our court system, a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits can be ejected from the courts, too. There's a legal term for a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits. They're called a vexatious litigant. Courts don't do this often, but a woman in Idaho filed so many frivolous lawsuits she was officially named a vexatious litigant by three states, two federal circuit courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court. The courts told the repeat lawsuit offender that she couldn't file any more lawsuits without special permission from a judge. So what did she do next? She actually sued the last judge who told her she couldn't file any more lawsuits. Let's be fair, taking away anyone's right to sue should be done only as a last resort. Yet because frivolous lawsuits tie up courts and delay justice for others, judges shouldn't hesitate to penalize people when they continuously abuse the courts. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, here he is, the man who likes to crack a spine. It's Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. That's me, Stuart Nauman.
Oh, I get it. I see what you did there. You brought a little Saturday Night Live retro speak into the proceedings.
That's right, and I just want to let you know this is not the Stuart Nauman decade, or not even the Al Franken decade, which is why, because in this edition of Book Banter, we're going to talk about Al Franken, but it's not his decade, although it could be, because Al Franken is now a senator. He's no longer an SNL writer or performer.
Yes, well, we all knew that.
Yes, but, you see, when I first heard the title of Al Franken's new book, it's a humorous political memoir called Giants of the Senate, you know, the first thing that came to mind was Master of the Senate, which was the title of a Pulitzer Prize-winning third volume of Robert A. Carroll's autobiography of Lyndon Johnson, who was the former U.S. president. And this volume covered Johnson's 12 years as Senate Majority Leader from 1948 to 1960, and how he used that esteemed, powerful position to its fullest extent, especially when he had to get legislation and government programs that he believed in get passed into law through the Senate. Now, although Al Franken is no master of this much-revered legislative body like LBJ, the former SNL writer-comedian-turned-junior senator from Minnesota has carved out an impressive track record since his first election to the U.S. Senate in 2008. As a true progressive politician whose main aim is to represent the people of Minnesota and fight for legislation that will benefit them and the American people as a whole. And when you come to think of it, with the acrimonious nature that has befallen both houses of Congress since 2009, and ramped up even more since Trump's election back in November, Franken has truly become a giant of the Senate, although he probably meant it in a more jokingly, rather self-deflating manner. Now, the book chronicles Franken's career from comedy to politics, first as a writer-performer for Saturday Night Live during the 70s and 80s, where we got the Al Franken decade,
to radio show host and satirist. You know, he's like a liberal equivalent to Rush Limbaugh, and the best-selling author to finally political activist and U.S. senator. Now, sparing no details, Franken gives the reader a clear, insightful look at how Minnesota politics works, especially all the bean feeds he had to attend as part of his first campaign to get the Democratic nomination for the Senate, how his first campaign against incumbent Republican Senator Norm Coleman was a nasty name-calling campaign, and he went through a series of recounts and court challenges before Franken was declared the winner and finally sworn in, but in the summer of 2009. The ins and outs of being a U.S. senator, in which he learned the hard way of how not to give his staff credit in public for a job well done, and the arduous process of trying to pass or defeat a piece of legislation and all the loopholes and roadblocks that go with it. And through it all, Franken tells his story with a great deal of rationality, knowledge, and, of course, generous doses of his somewhat understated yet always pointed sense of humor. And, of course, he saves his best venomous jabs for his Republican opponents to the Senate chamber. And although he admits the love-hate relationship to the current Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he lobs his most pointed venom-laden arrows for Texas Senator and former presidential candidate Ted Cruz. Now, let me sum up the way Franken sums up his working relationship with Ted Cruz. And I quote, he says, "Ted Cruz isn't just wrong about almost everything. He's impossible to work with. And he doesn't care that he's impossible to work with. And here's why. Even when the choice between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, establishment Republicans couldn't bring themselves to rally behind Cruz. Even if you like what he stands for, the most he'll ever be able to accomplish is being an obnoxious wrench in the gears of government. Real senatoring requires that you build productive relationships with your colleagues, and Ted just isn't that kind of guy."
Mm. It's also interesting to note, especially considering that his first election back in 2009 was such a squeaker and so debatable, that he decided at that point to prove to the constituents of Minnesota that he was up for the job, and therefore you didn't hear many a peep as far as humor is concerned from Al Franken. When he won his second election by quite a hefty majority, it was finally good to see the funny side of Al Franken coming out once again.
And he's really, he's used that humor many times, especially with Senate confirmation hearings, with cabinet confirmation hearings. He's really used liberal doses of that Al Franken humor, and that's really established his reputation on the Senate floor.
But as you said, liberal doses.
Liberal.
Yeah. So the book is entitled?
Well, it's called Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. It's by, obviously, Al Franken. It's published by 12 books, and it's $36.50.
And what other types of books do you recommend in the genre? I'm guessing you might even toss in the LBJ one you mentioned a few moments ago.
Yeah, I will recommend Master of the Senate, which is the third volume of Robert E. Caro's biography of Lyndon Johnson, which covers his years in the Senate. And it's an excellent book. It's a thorough book, retelling of not only his years in the Senate, but also the history of the Senate. So I do recommend that highly. Like I said, went up Pulitzer. And also Franken's first book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, which sort of established Al Franken as a political humorist of the most funny liberal nature.
Excellent.
And got me when I reviewed it on Book Banter when it was released in 1996, got me my first and only instance of hate mail.
Wow. I must have missed that. What happened?
Well, all I remember is after the show aired, and when I reviewed the book, I got a letter from one irate listener saying that how dare I review a book that tears down a great man like Rush Limbaugh. And then he finished it by all of a sudden just like throwing all these insults at me, especially the last part where it said I smacked of Stalinism. Well, he's in the gulag now, so nothing to worry about.
Okay, great. Besides being on this program, where can people find you? And I assume it's not, you know, making the trains run on time.
No, and it's not on the hallowed halls of Congress. It's within the pages of the Montreal Times, in print every Saturday or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
That's it. Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a very lovable guy Except to one person, apparently.
The Stuff File.
And we're into the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So let's get to those Stuff File news stories first, shall we? Ventura County, California sheriff's officers charged three produce workers with grand theft fruit after they were caught making unauthorized cash sales of avocados from a ripening facility. Joseph Valenzuela, age 38, Carlos Chavez, age 28, and Raheem LeBlanc, age 30, liquidated up to $300,000 worth of off-the-books avocados. "It's a big product here in California," said Sergeant Joe Franchi. "Everybody loves avocados." Well, guilty of a guacamole grab. And also in the Stuff File news, boys and girls, a German court has ruled that local authorities are entitled to prevent a group calling itself the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster from advertising its noodle masses as the entrance to an eastern town. Now, it's standard practice in Germany for small signs at the entrance of towns to announce there's a Lutheran or Catholic church and detail when it holds services. The Spaghetti Monster Group, an organization that criticizes religion as intolerant, wanted permission to do the same in Templin, which is northeast of Berlin. A news agency reported that the Brandenburg State Court ruled the group can't claim the rights of a religious or philosophical community. Judges said its criticism of others' beliefs doesn't constitute a philosophy. The group says that it's a humanist organization and plans to appeal. Well, for those who believe, their day of reckoning is going to be really interesting. Because, you know, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. And on that note, it's time, boys and girls, for the moment you've all been waiting for. Speaking of working in mysterious ways, it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Authorities in Florida say they arrested a suspected car thief who pulled into a store while being pursued so he could buy a welding mask to look at the eclipse. The Orange County Sheriff's Office said members of the auto theft unit were pursuing a car driven by 22-year-old Yoscan Feliciano Rosado when the vehicle pulled into a parking lot in Kissimmee. Deputies said Rosado went into the store and bought a welding helmet with blue flame decals on it. He was arrested while standing next to the stolen car and looking at a solar eclipse. "He never saw it coming," the sheriff's office said. "That only happens every 99 years. Now why? Oh, why? Do you stop in the middle of a car chase when the police are after you for stealing the car to buy a welding helmet so that you can watch a solar eclipse? And by the way, you can steal a car, but you can't steal a welding helmet?" Yeah, anyway, there's only one reason and one reason for you to do that. That's because you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0419. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0419. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.